Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. In this episode, we take a look at the world of regenerative agriculture with folks from the California State University at Chico. Their Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems is a leading force in ag innovation based on science and practical applications tested literally around the state of California. Joining me for this special episode is our producer, Matt Fidler.
Hello, Dave.
Matt, you've been interested in regenerative agriculture for a while now, and we're finally going to do an episode about it.
Yes, I know. I've worked on stories around agriculture for most of my career in public radio. And, you know, I know how difficult it is for farmers to balance, you know, their tiny profit margins with the massive environmental impact that agriculture can have. So being able to do a show around this issue with folks who are shaping the future of agriculture is really a privilege.
Very cool. Well, later on in the show, we're going to be joined by CSU Chico Environmental Science Professor Sandrine Matiasek and one of her graduate students, Jessica Portrera. And we'll also talk to Tyler Burke about his master's degree project studying regenerative ag practices at an alfalfa farm in Southern California. But first, Matt, we sent you on assignment to go visit the CSU Chico farm and dairy.
Yes, I toured the dairy with Dr. Cindy Daly, who was actually my professor when I took Animal Science 101 over 20 years ago at Chico State.
Great. We're going to be joined by Dr. Daly for an in-depth look at the Chico State program in just a bit. But first, let's have a listen to your visit.
Hi, I'm Cindy Daly. I'm the director for the Center for Regenerative Agriculture.
I joined up with Cindy so she could give me a tour of the dairy, which is the oldest part of the University Farm's regenerative ag program.
We want to try and integrate livestock in a strategic way that makes some sense.
To see how livestock are strategically integrated into the system, we head inside and meet the dairy cows. And almost immediately, the most friendly cows I've ever seen come walking up to me and demand some attention.
Hi, cows. Do they think we're going to... They're very friendly.
They're just like really big dogs.
Yeah, right?
They weigh 1,200-pound dogs. There are 10 students that work here and do all the milking, and they do the ration formulation, they do the grazing, they make sure the cows get out there to fresh feed. And so they do interact a lot with these animals. They're hand-raised. So they become very gentle and very... dog-like.
I know, they're really sweet.
I know, you can scratch them.
Oh, that one, like that.
Yeah, look at her.
Do you make any noise? I was like, you know, we're an audio program, cow. You want to say something?
She really doesn't make too much noise. I think if they make noise, then there's probably something wrong.
Well, they're sniffing. They're curious. They sniff your shovel.
Yeah.
Oh,
they
yeah.
Can get up close and personal. She's going to eat your microphone.
Cindy stops me and points down to something that's really important that cows do.
I'm looking at a manure cow pie, and there are cow pies, and then there are cow pies, and that's a cow pie. And what makes that beautiful is that it's bright green, so you know that she's off grass. You know there's quite a bit of forage in that cow pie, and the consistency is such that tells me that her protein level intake is good and that her microflora, internal microbiome within her rumen, is functioning the way it should. I mean, if there's dysbiosis in there, it'll show up in the manure. So that is a really good bioindicator of the health and welfare of the cows. And you've got a friend behind you there.
Oh, I know. I noticed that. Yeah. You have very sharp tongues, like a cat tongue.
Yeah, like a cat tongue is right. Yeah.
We say goodbye to the cows and head out to the pasture, where the cows graze the grasses and leave those beautiful cow pies behind to help build the soil.
You can see that this was recently grazed. And I think they came over the top of this with a seeding. So they're making ready for spring feed.
Cindy takes her shovel and digs a few inches into the soil and picks up a handful. It's rich, clumpy, and dark.
Yeah, you see the porosity here with this? This is some amazing soil. So this is 18 years in the making.
Very clumpy.
Yeah, it's aggregates. We're seeing lots of aggregates. It almost looks like dark chocolate cottage cheese. And that's the consistency that we want. That reflects really good soil biology, because the aggregates are stabilized by the fungal communities. And those fungal communities are producing a glomulin material that allows these aggregates to stick together. And they're very resilient. They're resistant to wind and water erosion. And it's porous enough that the fall rains that we do get will get to capture here, and it'll infiltrate, because the water infiltration is better here. This allows for water to infiltrate into the soil profile. And then you see how nice and dark it is? That is high organic matter, and that organic matter holds water. So we've got better water holding capacity, and we've got better water infiltration. And all of that means that, you know, these regenerative practices allow us to be more water use efficient. And in California, that matters.
And these practices don't just save on water, but on pesticides and eventually even fertilizer. And they ultimately make a higher quality product for the consumer, which makes these practices economically sustainable, because farmers need to make a living too. And no one can adopt a process, no matter how good for the environment, that loses money.
That sounded like a lot of fun, Matt. And I think you've got some new bovine friends too. Now let's get a Regenerative Agriculture 101 with Dr. Daly. Cynthia Daly is the director and co-founder of the CSU Chico Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems, and she joins us now. Cindy Daly, welcome to Blue Dot.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
To start out, talking to lots of people that I've been visiting with and asking them about regenerative agriculture, most folks I talk to have no idea what it is. So could you give us a brief definition of what is regenerative agriculture?
Okay, well, RegenAg is really a system of farming that is in sync with nature. It's really trying to go biological rather than geochemical. It's about enhancing our soil health, improving water quality, air quality, and produces a pretty healthy product, more nutrient dense.
And you're the director, as I said, and one of the founders of the Regenerative Agriculture Program there at CSU Chico. Tell us briefly just a little bit about your journey to this world of regenerative ag and how that got started at Chico State.
I was born into agriculture in the breadbasket of the country. I grew up in Illinois. My family farms, and that's really all my family's done. I call myself homozygous for farming genetics because it's on my mother and my father's side. So ultimately, we went to the University of Illinois. Went to, university there in Illinois. And the goal was, to always, get back into the farming aspect of things. But I think ultimately, there were six kids and not enough farm to go around. So I just continued on with my education. And that brought me out to California. And I went to the University of California, Davis, and I did my graduate work there. And then went to work for the CSU system. The CSU system has a really great agricultural program, and their emphasis is on undergraduate education, and that was a real fit for me. And I've been here in the College of Agriculture, and we brought on the organic dairy program in 2006. And it was very regenerative in terms of how that system came together. And it was, we did this organic dairy program because the conventional dairy that was there at the university farm was failing. It was not economically viable. So, we're not in a budgetary situation where we can allow a livestock unit to go in the red on a real regular basis. So we took a long, hard look at that, and I had a lot of interest in bringing a organic, integrated, regenerative farming system into the curriculum. And so we went into this organic regen dairy program. Organic is really only about 2% of production ag. So the other 98%, really needs, this alternative approach. So we started the center. And we did that together with some foundations, with some farmers, and then with some faculty. And we created this in 2019. And it has been growing by leaps and bounds ever since. We have four big programs that all work toward supporting growers in transitioning their farms and ranches to regenerative ag. That's our goal. That's our mission.
Yeah. Can you maybe describe those programs and give us a sense of the scope and scale of the program that you've built there? Because it's pretty impressive.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Appreciate that. We have a technical assistance training program, which is now into its fifth year. It takes about a year of these online classes. Four of them are required for the certificate. And these courses are non-credit, and they're designed for the working professional that wants to work with growers directly in building out conservation plans. And so that has been very successful. I have over 250 people that have gone through these courses, and we have several that are now certified and working at local RCDs or working for consulting businesses or agribusinesses that have on-farm consultants. So that is one thriving program, and we see the ripple effect with that, in that everybody that we train and that goes into the industry and begins producing these regenerative conservation plans for growers are helping us transition farmland. So that is a real ripple effect. And simultaneously to this training program, we also maintain our own team. We've got a 4-member technical assistance training team that is also out helping growers in our region. And at the moment, we've worked with 119 growers and have touched over 34,000 acres with a variety of funding. And based on the implementation modeling, we've inhibited 26,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions. So that to me is pretty successful. And we do have more demand for the programs that we have for planning and for implementation than we have funds, and we have TAPs. So this would be another great place for us to expand, and we are. We're out looking for funding in order to expand our team. I think we could easily take on 2 more full-time TAPs to
what
try.
TAPs being?
Technical assistance providers. Okay. So we call those TAPs, short for technical assistance providers, that support regenerative ag practice implementation on farms. So they design farms with this regenerative carbon lens. And ultimately, they design the farm and they do the implementation components of things, and they provide the support to growers that they need. That has been a gap in this whole transitional process, is adequate numbers of skilled workforce that really understands, conservation ag and how to go about designing farms and implementing that on farm.
Could you describe for me, if you could just picture in your mind, like an ideal regenerative ag farm, what would be some of the things that we would see on one of those farms in, the Sacramento Valley in California, compared to conventional? What would it look like? What would be some of the things that we would see that you would say, yes, this is a hallmark of regenerative ag?
Okay. Well, depending on the cropping system, we have a set of tools that we call regenerative ag or conservation tools that we would implement. So let's take an almond orchard. And, that's pretty monoculture in terms of how they're designed currently. We would start with a fall multi-species cover crop that would be seeded in October and come up with fall rains. So that multi-species cover crop is providing a living root in the ground, transitioning that soil with some really amazing plant root exudates. Those exudates are feeding the biology. And so that's the first step toward really transitioning that soil into a more biological charged engine. In addition to the multi-species cover crop, which would really grow all fall and winter, and that obviously, all that biomass is really providing biological diversity. It's providing habitat for good bugs that outcompete the bad bugs, and it also injects all that nutrition into the soil that feeds the biology. And then the biology feeds the crop. So multi-species cover crop is one of the big indicators and one of the, you know, I consider it low-hanging fruit with respect to on-farm transition. It's easy to do. It's fairly inexpensive. And it's usually quite successful in helping to transition soil.
And I would think when you're doing that, you're also creating habitat for pollinators, which would lessen, I would hope, the need to constantly have to be bringing bees in to pollinate the almond crop. Does it help with that too?
It absolutely helps with pollinator species. It's kind of a two-for-one kind of an approach because we get the diversity that we need in our agroecological system by, you know, providing all those different root exudates to support the soil microbiome diversity, but it also provides, you know, pollinator habitat. It does do a tremendous job there. And, you know, we can vary the species depending upon what it is that you, you know, have for a goal. So whatever your context or your goal is, you know, for your plan, you could design a cover crop mix to meet that need. But we do have growers that have a nematode issue. That's a parasite that's in the soil that can be quite damaging to crops. And if you select brassicas in your mix, you know, they secrete a nematicide in their root exudate that can actually inhibit nematodes. And I tend to fall back on Danny Unruh. He's one of these growers that are now into his 10th year of regenerative practice. So we call his system a mature regen orchard system. And he has eliminated his nematode problem by using mustards and other brassicas in his fall cover crop. We call it a cool season multi-species cover crop. So those are the kinds of things you can do with these kinds of cover crops to really help address some of the issues that you might have on farm.
Another thing I'd like to ask you about, you mentioned the dairy earlier. And our producer, Matt Fiddler, went with you to visit there, and he really enjoyed it. Could you talk about the importance that grazing animals can have on a farm and for the soils?
Sure. Right. You know, that's probably the area that we know the least about with respect to regenerative practices. But one of the five soil health principles is livestock integration. And there is a way in which to integrate livestock into cropping systems that is quite beneficial to soil and soil health. And so with the dairy, you know, the livestock out on grass, that is, again, a regenerative management practice where we are using managed intensive grazing, rotational grazing, where the animals are concentrated on an area in that irrigated pasture system where they'll go in and they we calculate just how much dry matter they need to consume for that entire herd. We have about 85 cows in that cow herd at the university's farm dairy. So that dry matter allocation is made. The cows go in, they graze. And when they come back in for their milking, the fence is moved again to accommodate the next shift. So our cows are moved every 12 hours. Every time they're milked, they come back out from the milk parlor to new fresh feed. And they'll consume that over a 12-hour period. And then they'll be pulled off, they go in and milk, and they will not return to that same area for about 35, 40 days. So we call that the period of rest. And what happens is that the plants are allowed to completely recover after they're grazed. And that has a pulsing effect on the soil. It's a very positive impact on soil health. You know, not to mention that we're completely distributing all of the waste. The manure and the urine is getting completely distributed throughout the entire pasture in this style of grazing. And that is also quite beneficial to soil health. So it's a really positive thing for the ecosystem when we approach, you know, livestock production in this way.
Yeah, and you're not concentrating all that waste in one place. Like you said, you're rotating it around, and it just sounds like a, you know, the smart way to do things. What are you most proud of or enjoy the most about being involved in this incredible program you've built up there at CSU Chico?
It's the excitement of the students that get involved in this. It really thrills me to see just how excited the students are about this method of farming. And so that's got to be the paramount thing. But it's also the growers that really, you know, get switched on. It does take a little bit to get them excited about these practices. But once they see them on their farms and how they function, the light comes on, and then they become real advocates, you know, for these farming practices and this style of ecological farming.
Well, Cynthia Daly, director of the Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems at California State University Chico, thanks for joining us to tell us about this just incredibly innovative program that you've built up there. It's just really cool to hear about.
Hey, well, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks to our guest, Cynthia Daly, director of the CSU Chico Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems. Let's take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our look at regenerative agriculture with guests from the California State University Chico College of Natural Sciences and Agriculture. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Our next guests are Chico State Environmental Science Professor Sandrine Matiasek and graduate student Jessica Portrera. They join us now to look at how regenerative agriculture practices enhance soil and ecosystem health on ag lands.
Thank you, Dave. Happy to be back.
Hello.
Well, I'd like to start out, Sandrine, with you just giving us a little bit of background on you are an environmental science professor who I'm quite familiar with at Chico State. But tell me about the path that led you into regenerative agriculture there.
Yeah. You know, growing up in rural France, I played outside playing with dirt before I knew how to call it something else. I was surrounded by dairy farms and vineyards and understood the value of soil from an agricultural perspective. But it wasn't until graduate school at UC Davis doing my PhD in hydrology. But I studied carbon cycling in the water of an agricultural watershed. And that's when it hit me that I loved soils. And I love soils because if you care about water quality, you need to care about soils because they are playing an integral part in cleaning up water and, you know, interacting with water and controlling water quality. So that's how I fell in love with soils. And coming to Chico State, I worked with soils when studying urban runoff remediation, looking at green infrastructure like bioswales and rooftop gardens, and thinking of ways to use soil to clean up contaminated runoff. And that extended to also fire runoff in a burnt watershed, places with natural ground cover had lower impacts on from the fire, suffered less in terms of water quality than a paved kind of urban watershed. But then I returned to my ag roots with the Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems and with this project that I'm involved in. So this happened actually from a friend and colleague, Dr. Garrett Lyles, who is in the College of Ag here at Chico. And I started measuring water extractable organic carbon from soil from different farms that were part of CRARS, of the center. And so that's how I kind of got into working with the center. And then now it's been 2 years that we are working on this soil carbon accrual project with Garrett and others at the center, comparing regenerative agriculture and traditional conventional agriculture practices.
And what about you, Jessica? I don't think agriculture was the direction you were originally headed.
No, originally I was supposed to go to Monterey Bay State for marine biology and ended up switching to Chico. And I ended up choosing the environmental science major at Chico because, you know, in my teenage head at the time, I thought to myself, oh, environmental science sounds similar enough to marine biology. So that's basically how I fell into environmental science. And honestly, I grew to love it, especially being in Sandrine's soil science class. That really just opened my eyes to how important soil is as a natural resource to quite literally every living thing there is. And then, you know, I graduated from Chico with my bachelor's in environmental science. And then I got an email from Sandrine asking me if I wanted to apply for the master's program. And I said yes, and ended up, you know, being accepted and becoming her master's student. And that's how I got involved with this project, the Soil Carbon Accrual Project and the Center, is by becoming a master's student and having my research surround the project. And my research is about examining the differences in soil water dissolved organic matter content and composition between regenerative agriculture practices and the traditional conventional agriculture practices.
Well, let's talk about those two terms, Sandrine. For folks that are not totally aware, compare how the soil is treated. We're talking about soil here, not dirt. Let's differentiate between those two things. What makes something soil rather than just dirt?
Soil is alive. Soil is the excited skin of the earth. So soil is not rock. And soil is a product of the soil formation process that involves many different factors, but it involves climate, it involves the topography, the rocks, the parent material, but also the biology, right? So these organisms in soils are an integral part of soil formation and also what makes soils alive and different from rocks.
And then when we talk about conventional agriculture, where, you know, you're plowing up the soil and then you're planting a crop and repeating ad nauseum through the years, talk about how that depletes soil health compared to what you're trying to do there with regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, so the conventional agricultural practices that have been used over the last century, let's say, they are pretty intensive, right? They tend to actively disturb the soil, breaking down soil aggregates, which are the clumps of soil that form naturally, breaking them down by tilling, by disturbance, right? And so anytime a tractor goes through a field, it will compact the soil particles, but more importantly, it's the tilling that really breaks down the soil natural architecture. And then the other aspects are industrial agriculture tends to have a tendency to use monocropping, so the same crop over and over, especially if we're talking about annual crops, you know, if we're talking about a field of corn, so corn planted every summer, and then during the winter after harvest, the corn stubs are left in the ground, or they're tilled directly right away. But there is a period of fallow time when nothing is growing on the soil. Bare soil is left to the elements. And so the other major impact on soil health related to conventional agriculture is the use of synthetic fertilizers and pesticides. And so with additions of nutrients through fertilizer and then addition of, you know, molecules that are toxic to certain types of organisms to some of the life in soil, we're directly impacting the soil biology, and that's really changing soils that way. So the promise of regenerative agriculture, or the goal of regenerative ag, is to try to reverse some of these effects on soil, and use agricultural practices that are trying to promote more of that soil aggregation, so more of that leaving that soil structure together, leaving it alone, so reduced tilling, less disturbance. Instead of using monocropping, the idea is to have constant actively growing, so year-round actively growing vegetation. So that's with not just a cash crop, but also cover crops. So using some of these legumes, some of the beans and other nitrogen-fixing crops throughout the winter instead of leaving the soil bare. And obviously much less fertilizer, ideally none, but you know, trying to find a way to have less additions of fertilizer and pesticides. And that's also why having diverse crop rotations really helps to fight the pests by having a more diverse soil microbiology and integrated pest management and so on.
It's interesting to me to think about, like, when I go out in natural places where they're not agricultural and you find this wonderful soil, you know, a lot of that is because there are so many living things there, different kinds of plants, different kinds of animals, different kinds of insects, the fungi, everything working together to make that soil what it is. And it seems to me that regenerative, you're trying to work with the patterns of nature to create this, you know, on an agricultural setting.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head. It's a matter of restoring all the richness of a life, of the life of the soil, right? So soil health really is about restoring soil function and soil biology that would take place naturally. So with diverse biology, with an increase in organic matter in soil, soils clump together better, so that gives them the ability to both let water drain, you know, infiltrate and pass through them more easily, but also it gives the soils the ability to act like sponges, to hold on to water better, thanks to more organic matter and better aggregation. And then this organic matter and the better aggregation and the ability to retain water is going to be a better environment for plants and microbes to thrive. So it's a really a regenerative loop, right? A beneficial loop. You bring life and you get more life.
Regenerating life. It's a well-named practice.
Yeah. When you use synthetic fertilizers, you're only providing the plant with the nutrients it needs, as opposed to using organic amendments like in regenerative agriculture that actually feeds the life of the soil and allows it to cycle nutrients and perform the services it needs to.
And on the subject of cycling, one of the benefits of regenerative agriculture is to try to take carbon out of the atmosphere, which we know is a major problem, and put it back in the ground where it kind of belongs and it needs to be. Could you talk, Sandrine, a bit about the carbon cycle and where soils fit into that?
Absolutely. I just talked about this morning in class.
Well, good. Teach me.
So, when you think about carbon, when I say carbon, what do you think of first in terms of which sphere of the environment do you think of first?
Well, for me, I think about it as a global carbon cycle. You know, I know that all life is based on carbon and that we breathe out carbon dioxide and so do our combustion processes, which has become a problem. But living things need carbon. It's the basis of all life on Earth.
Right. And so a lot of the components of the carbon cycle that you mentioned relate to the atmosphere, right? A lot of times when we think of carbon, we think directly about the CO2, the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And that's a very valid thought because due to our burning of fossil fuels, we are increasing the concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But did you know that there is more carbon on Earth in soils than in the atmosphere? So soils hold more carbon than the atmosphere does.
And then conversely, that makes me wonder that those non-regenerative practices that we've been doing for so long in traditional agriculture are probably contributing to the carbon in the atmosphere that shouldn't be there.
Absolutely, yes. When you look at the carbon cycle, there is this production of CO2 from the ground to the atmosphere due to land use changes, due to disturbance. So if we zoom in a little bit more and think about the carbon cycle in an agricultural setting, in an agroecosystem, we have CO2 from the atmosphere that gets sequestered or picked up by plants, right, through the photosynthesis process. So this process is really critical in drawing CO2 from the atmosphere into a solid, you know, in the plant biomass. So plants are making sugars, they're making cell walls with that carbon from the atmosphere. And then as plants decompose, you know, when plants die and decompose, like right now is a great time of the year to think about this. We have all this dead vegetation, like the dead leaves, that get on the ground. And this is a great input of carbon into soils. Soil microbes are going to do a great job at eating up that carbon, decomposing it, and sequestering it, you know, storing that carbon in the ground as organic matter. And some of that carbon, you know, through this process, there is microbial respiration. So some of the carbon is actually released back as carbon dioxide, as CO2, but it actually can also be a source of CO2 for plants that are still growing and still doing photosynthesis at the ground level. So that's really interesting. And yeah, so that's kind of the process. And just to kind of distinguish between organic carbon and inorganic carbon, so anything that is carbon dioxide and also the carbonates that are related to carbon dioxide, those forms of carbon are inorganic carbon because, you know, carbonates come from rocks. And CO2 gas, that one is kind of weird because it is respired, so it does come from life, but it's not a building block of life. In contrast to organic matter, the way I think of organic matter is all the biomolecules, right? It's those carbon to carbon bonds that make up our cells and any life form, really.
Yeah, the way I like to think about organic versus inorganic with carbon especially is organic just means it either is alive or was alive, whereas inorganic, not.
Yeah, exactly.
And then another aspect of your work, and Jessica, I want to talk to you about this, is mm-hmm. is water. Because it's so apparent when you go and see healthy soils that they retain water. And when you see places that are stressed, you can see the soils are drying out. Tell us a bit about your work on changes in soil water composition. Tell us about, you know, how you go about monitoring that and studying it both in the field and in the lab, because it's very interesting to me. And I understand that really isn't that well understood.
So in the field, we have instruments installed called lysimeters, or also called soil water samplers. You can think of them as a long PVC pipe with a ceramic cup at the bottom and two pieces of tubing coming out of the top. We also sample surface water by sampling incoming irrigation water and the runoff that exits the field. And then I also measure dissolved organic carbon concentration in the samples. You know, I look over it, I perform, you know, some statistical tests to see if there are differences between like the seasons or the fields.
What are you observing in terms of the soil moisture in the fields that are using regenerative practices versus conventional?
I'm not so much looking at the moisture of the soil, more so the water that already exists in there, what the content and composition of the organic matter is in that water. So far, the regenerative field has more dissolved organic carbon than the conventional field. And also, based off some data analysis with absorbance and dissolved organic carbon, we're seeing that the dissolved organic matter in the regenerative field has a lower aromaticity, which means that the molecules are smaller and they're less complex and they're more easily digested by soil microbes. There's more soil microbial diversity there, more activity going on, which translates into a healthier soil.
Well, Sandrine Matisic, environmental science professor at Chico State, and master's student Jessica Portrera, thanks for sharing your passion for this work and the fascination with regenerative agriculture, because it's something that I think is really important for people to learn about. And California State University Chico is certainly on the cutting edge of this.
Thank you, Dave. A pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks to our guests from the Chico State Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems, environmental science professor Sandrine Matisic, and graduate student Jessica Portrera. Let's take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll look at a study on an alfalfa farm near Blythe, California, that demonstrates the potential benefits of regenerative agriculture. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Our final guest for our look at regenerative agriculture is Tyler Burke. Tyler recently completed his master's degree at CSU Chico's Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems, and he joins us now to talk about a special study that he was deeply involved with. Tyler Burke, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thanks. I really appreciate you guys having me here and getting the opportunity to talk to you and all of your audience.
Well, one of the things I've been asking folks is to give us your personal, like, elevator speech, brief definition of what is regenerative agriculture? Because for a lot of people, it's a term they may have heard, but don't really understand.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of fun because the CDFA, or California Department of Food and Agriculture, actually defined regenerative agriculture this year. And it wasn't necessarily for a certification standard, but it was meant to inform guiding agencies, boards, and commissions about how to use the term in programs and policy. To me, I would say that it's a system of land management focused on building and sustaining healthy living soils, recognizing soils as dynamic ecosystems made up of minerals, organic matter, air, and water. And then in all of that, there are diverse microbial communities. So rather than homogenizing land and relying primarily on extended external inputs to feed crops, regenerative agriculture emphasizes the stewardship of soil health so that soils can naturally support productive, resilient crops and ecosystems over time.
Yeah, it's kind of like working with nature so that you don't have to use all of the fertilizers and as much water and everything. It's really quite an effective, efficient way of growing things, isn't it?
Yeah, and I actually was fortunate enough. I had time to listen to some of your permaculture episode yesterday, and it was comical to me because a lot of the principles remain the same, working with nature and trying to emphasize the health of the system as a whole.
Well, I'd like to also just briefly know about your personal journey, because you're an older student, not, you know, old, but older than the typical college student. Tell us about your journey that brought you to this program at Chico State.
Yeah, I don't know if my story is necessarily unique, but I got out of the military and gardening became a really important pastime of mine. And it led me to pursue agriculture academically, and then I ended up at Chico State and was fortunate enough to become part of the Soil Carbon Accrual Project, where I could see these principles that I had been learning about on a garden scale actually applied to commercial agriculture, and see how things actually scale up and whether or not these principles foster the same amount of productivity on large scale systems.
Well, let's talk about that program specifically, the Soil Carbon Accrual Project. That's one of the kind of the keystones to regenerative ag is that concept of capturing carbon, taking it out of the atmosphere. Explain to us kind of how that's a component of your work.
So carbon and microbes generally have this positive feedback loop. So as we're putting carbon into the ground, microbes are able to use that as food and create more microbial activity or more microbes. So then there's more microbial activity. We're getting more breakdown of carbon, and it's helping with the nutrient cycling. It's helping with the cycling of life through these ecosystems. The Soil Carbon Accrual Project, however, though, is a long-term field scale study comparing regenerative and conventional farming systems, measuring how these systems actually differ, looking at variables involved in soil carbon, soil biology. They're also looking at water efficiency and overall farm resilience. So not just the side of things that I was looking at, but this is a truly interdisciplinary field scale study of agricultural practices, broadening our whole scale interpretation of what these practices do, how sustainable they are, how long it takes for us to get from point A to point B to point C, and so on and so forth. Because I was only looking at 3 years of data, and there's a lot of people that have been doing this for decades now, and we're seeing that, yes, these first 3 to 5 years are very crucial in our understanding, but they are a transition period. It is not the full context of what these systems are truly capable of.
Well, tell us about the site that you've been studying. It's in a very arid part of California, using water from the Colorado River. Tell us about the site you studied.
Yeah, so I worked on the soil microbiome side of this project, basically the living community in the soil. And I tend to think of these communities and these microbes as the first responders in agriculture, because they react quickly to changes in management. And what I wanted to see was whether or not the microbial communities in the regenerative fields started to look different from what we were seeing on the conventional side of things in these first 3 years. So not just how many microbes are there or total abundance, but how the whole system was organized. And to look at that, I used a method that clustered community data so we could see whether the soils are moving in different directions over time. So it's kind of like tracking a neighborhood changing, not just counting houses, but I wanted to see whether the actual community composition shifted as regenerative practices took hold of these soils, essentially.
That's an interesting analogy, kind of like, okay, my neighborhood has more younger families and children in it. It's changed over time. That's an interesting way of looking at it. And then tell us about what you found over the 3 years you studied. What are some of the big takeaways of your work?
Yeah, so over the first 3 years, we did end up seeing significant changes in community composition, but these were gradual changes, and they didn't happen immediately, and they didn't happen through the entire soil horizon immediately. There was no significant change in 2023. We actually saw more microbial biomass in the conventional side of things, but there was more fungal dominance on the regenerative side of things in that first year. By the second year, there was significantly more microbial biomass on the regenerative side of things, and significantly more of pretty much all of those communities. And the composition began changing. By that third year, the soil was actually starting to homogenize, where we had significant community differences at our top soil sample and our bottom soil sample. So what we're seeing in the first 3 years is that we're really slow but very positive results. And I don't know how else to say this other than my biggest takeaway is that we're on the right track with these practices and how we're stewarding the land.
Tyler Burke, it's been a joy to talk to you about your study of that site at Palo Verde, Blythe, California, and your obvious passion for this wonderful program at Chico State that's so unique at the Center for Regenerative Agriculture.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to all of our guests from the CSU Chico Center for Regenerative Agriculture and Resilient Systems. Director and co-founder Cynthia Daly, environmental science professor Sandrine Matiasek, and graduate students Jessica Portrera and Tyler Burke. And thanks to Matt Fidler for his tour of the university farm and dairy. You can learn more about the CSU Chico Regenerative Agriculture Program at csuchico.edu/regenerativeagriculture, and that regenerative agriculture is all one word. And just a transparency note, NSPR's broadcast licenses are owned by Chico State. The university does not oversee our news production or programming. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Chico State Enterprises and licensed to California State University Chico in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.